BRB 114, the Jazz Studio, where tradition meets technology.
Welcome to the Jazz Studio. I'm Gary Motley. My guests today are Robert Spano, director of the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and artist in residence, and Dwight Andrews, associate professor of jazz studies and composition. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Our pleasure.
Our topic today is improvisation and the process of realizing and interpreting a musical work. Robert, you've been recognized as one of the most imaginative conductors of your generation. You've premiered and continue to premiere works that take the orchestra far beyond its traditional boundaries. Dwight, your work as a composer is far-reaching, ranging from compositions for chamber ensembles to your award-winning collaborations with playwright August Wilson and others. The two of you have been key contributors to the changing landscape of the music. Let's talk about the changes that you both have witnessed in recent years. We see now with the orchestra a departure from the traditional literature, Robert, and starting to embrace new works. As a director and as a conductor, how do you approach that?
I guess in a large sense, one of the things I have to be mindful of and careful about is the balance of what makes an orchestra what it is, because in a sense it is and always will be, as long as we have them around, an invention of the 19th century in the way that we know it. And of course, historically, the roots of that are earlier, and it keeps transforming after that. But the core of an orchestra, a symphony orchestra, is Beethoven and Brahms and Tchaikovsky, and that's its identity, its personality, in a sense. And for me, one of the most fascinating things is how do you keep expanding that and growing it and making it more flexible and capable, giving it new skill sets even, or giving myself new skill sets. It's always a learning curve for me too, without ever abandoning, because everything comes from that ability to embrace that skill set. And it is its own particular skill set. Certainly for the musicians, you know, their capacity to really quickly engage a complex piece of orchestral literature is really impressive. Then we start moving out. And then the challenges that are outside of our training, in a sense, or at least for the majority of us, then things become really interesting. And how do we take our skill set and keep it, but adjust it and embrace new challenges, like improvising within an orchestral context, or taking on a new language? I mean, for me, I always feel like I'm learning new languages. Music isn't a language to me, but a number of them, and they have their own ways of operating. And to me, part of the challenge and the excitement is embracing that multiplicity of language that's in the world of music and how orchestras can expand into that.
Dwight, as a composer, when you are creating a work with the idea in mind that you're going to be presenting this to people and they have to interpret that, what are some of the things that you take into consideration in putting that together?
Well, it's a very good question, especially given the maestro's remarks, because I think the first thing that I think is that for the composer, the challenge is to be clear what your intention is. So it means that your notation, your notes, and when possible, your engagement with a conductor or with an orchestra really allows for a wonderful collaboration and conversation, especially with new work. Because what's in a composer's head is always realized in a way that's surprising to everyone. So one has to be as clear as possible with what you're putting on paper. But also, because the orchestra is this instrument of the 19th century that continues to kind of expand in the hands of creative composers, I think the challenge for the composer is to understand the wonderful range that the orchestra is. As a young player coming through the 19th century repertoire and then hearing and playing a Stravinsky piece in an orchestra and hearing that world of sound around you really changed my whole idea about what the orchestra was. I mean, when you play Debussy and you just hear this swirl of sound, that's what really invigorated my ideas about composing, because all of a sudden this instrument that I thought I knew, the symphony orchestra, was this whole new possibility. So I think in some ways, the idea is on both sides of the table, both for the composer and for the orchestra, is the willingness to kind of rediscover the sense of possibility and then trying to notate that and present it in as clear a way as possible.
I think sometimes when we look at the orchestra and the way that quote-unquote things have been traditionally done, where a composer sets out a set of ideas and then those ideas are to be interpreted, we're introducing a new concept, but we're seeing more of this now where the concept of improvisation is included in works. And this question for both of you, how do we deal with introducing that certain degree of uncertainty into a structured performance?
Oh boy, I was looking at Robert because I wanted to hear him answer first, but
and then I looked at you.
Well, that's a complicated question, and what I mean by that is that in many ways most orchestral musicians, at least a generation ago, were not very well prepared for improvising. And in a sense, you're asking them to do things that they really didn't have a great sense of comfort or experience with. I think that's changing because now many of our younger players have such a broad preparation that they're open and willing and actually experience that improvisation in a variety of different ways and different techniques. So I'm finding that the orchestra is kind of better able these days to deal with pieces that require improvisation. And so it's more of a possibility now than it was when I was a young student, in which I had no preparation for improvising.
And also, I think your whole initial statement about the most effective way to communicate with your notation, how to realize the composer's intention, is true even with improvisational structures.
Yes.
Because I've found that the composers who are most successful with setting up improvisational parameters are the ones who communicate to us what to do that's still going to get what the composer wants.
Yes.
Because the trap about improvisation is it doesn't mean it's free.
Right.
It means there's freedom within parameters so that you're still going to get the result the composer's looking for that you can't quite get by writing it all out. You need that improvisational quality, but it's not just a free-for-all.
Exactly, exactly.
And that skill, I think you're absolutely right, has been developing in the last couple decades in a way that we just didn't see before. And all, on both ends,
yes,
the players are getting more comfortable and familiar with engaging that kind of musical activity and discipline, and composers are getting better at figuring out how to instruct toward the end of achieving it.
Intention is everything. I'm thinking about when I first came to New York in the 70s, and Anthony Braxton and some of those composers who were being very, very careful and who had been very influenced by the music of Webern and Schoenberg and others. He had a very specific set of parameters that he gave the improvisers. But on the other hand, some of the improvisers from the Art Ensemble of Chicago, you know, they would just have a card and say, blow, you know. And so all of a sudden those parameters became, you know, almost too big because you didn't know kind of what to do. So I think that the composers and the innovators are coming up with their own ways to best kind of direct you down that path. And the more clear they can be, the easier it is.
Then there's that oral tradition attitude where,
yes,
they are not even trying to notate,
right,
very clearly what they want. Right away I think of a number of the works of Stockhausen.
Right.
I mean, he did the very careful notation and very explicit coming out of the training he had. And then by later in his life, he's like that work Stimmung for, mm-hmm, six voices. That score is, if you only had the score, I don't think you could realize the piece.
Yes.
Despite the fact he gave materials and instructions, he was in the room.
Yes.
And he was actually masterminding what was going on. Osvaldo Golioff works a lot that way. He gets people who work with him, and then there's kind of this circle around him who know what's what. I had a colleague call me who was about to do Aina Lamar, Golioff's opera, and he said, "Well, I've got your recording and I've got the score. What am I supposed to do?"
Yes.
And so there's still around some of this, and it's interesting because there is an oral tradition aspect even to playing Mozart.
Right.
However long it's been, there is still some connective tissue there where the page doesn't quite, and so there's this paradox,
yeah,
of trying to get the page to instruct clearly and the composer's intent to be clear in terms of their communication, and the fact that often the page just doesn't,
right,
tell us enough. And even with Mozart, if you didn't know, if you didn't come out of a training that's been around for a few hundred years, the page wouldn't quite tell you enough.
That's right. That's an excellent point. And perhaps in some ways, you know, to think about notation and its limitations is really important, because some of the more creative composers do allow for the collaborative act of being in the room, which does further the whole end result. And so you're absolutely right. There's only so much you can put in on paper in any context. The oral tradition and the oral possibilities, I think, are really important.
Which kind of makes me wonder. I hadn't thought about it in quite this way until we're talking about this, but when you do have that intent to be as clear as possible on paper, somehow recognizing that almost paradoxical situation might help in the sense of, well, what do they need to know that they're that they're not gonna, is that true?
Yes, I think that's right. And so you have to ask the question, what is it that I'm trying to communicate?
Without, what do they need to know?
Right.
Yeah.
Without overly legislating. You know, what you want. So you're exactly right. So that's a question that the composer, and sometimes I think we don't, sometimes we're not as careful in our questions as we are in our answers. So
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
It seems to me when I go back and I look at the music and how things develop, I mean, we go back and I joke with my students all the time that, you know, Bach was really the first jazz musician.
Absolutely.
You know, when we talk about this whole notion of improvisation, that really was a part of common practice. And at some point, there was a break and a departure from these things that were literally one thing. And now we're kind of seeing a return, but in a revised manner.
Figured bass score has a lot more to do with a jazz chart than it does with a Mahler symphony.
Yes. Yeah, yep, exactly. That's exactly
right. They're a lot closer.
A lot closer.
Yeah.
So now we're kind of seeing this return, but with a renewed perspective.
BRB 114, The Jazz Studio, where tradition meets technology.